You're listening to New Churches Podcast, a production of Send Network on newchurches.com. We discuss all things church planting. If you're looking to take your next step toward multiplication, you're in the right place. newchurches.com provides relevant and reliable resources for church planters, church multipliers, and disciple makers. Our growing library features pastors, planters, and church leaders like Ed Stetzer, David Platt, Matt Chandler, Trillia Newbell, Christine Hoover, Dehati Lewis, Trevin Wax, and many others.
Hey there, welcome to the New Churches Podcast. I'm Clint Clifton, and today we have the incredible privilege of talking to Christian Pinkston. Christian is the founder and president of Pinkston, a public relations firm in Washington, D.C. And you might say, hey, why are we talking to a public relations guy on a church planting podcast? Well, it's because, I don't know if you've noticed, but church planters and pastors are sometimes having a difficult time relating to the general public and to society at large. So Christian is a thoughtful believer. He loves the Lord, and he has incredible knowledge and expertise in the area of public relations. Christian founded Pinkston, his company, with the goal of utilizing his skills and his expertise in strategic communications to pour into the lives of colleagues and clients and communities that are served all over the place by churches and nonprofits and even businesses. He's a frequent speaker and writer on communications, innovation, and entrepreneurship. Christian has served clients ranging from Fortune 100 companies and disruptive technology startups to major international nonprofits and ministries. He's also counseled with the likes of AIG and Facebook and Amazon and the United Nations World Food Program, World Vision, Compassion International. He's helped them through periods of growth and crisis and in reorganization and transition, helping them to launch new products and strengthening brand awareness to build thought leadership platforms within their organizations and outside of their organizations, and to amplify the impact of humanitarian and mission-oriented work. He advises CEOs and thought leaders and best-selling authors and pastors and other leaders on communicating in today's complex and evolving landscape. Prior to founding Pinkston, Christian was the vice president of public policy at Ogilvy Public Relations, and he previously served as the executive director of communications and communications director at one of Washington's most respected and influential political institutions. He also directed communications for a presidential campaign. He's been the spokesman for two former cabinet officials, and he served on the staffs of a congressman from California and a senator from Maine. This guy knows what he's talking about when it comes to public relations, and he has a unique heart for church planters and pastors, and wants to help us do a better job at serving the people that we're trying to reach. So Christian Pinkston is going to help us today. Christian, welcome to the New Churches Podcast.
Thanks, Clint. It's so good to be here. I appreciate it.
Yeah. Well, it's exciting to be able to talk to you. I wanted to hear a little bit about Pinkston, the company you founded, and what the organization does, particularly in the faith community.
Yeah. We have been around for about 20 years. But I tell people, and I hopefully operate like this, I feel like I... probably like your listeners, am called into full-time ministry.
Yeah.
And mine just looks different. My business or my profession, my company is not my purpose, not my calling. It's just a platform the Lord gave me from which to love my neighbor in radical ways, whether it's colleagues or clients or whatever. And certainly that ability, I'm not good at it, but the degree to which I do it only comes through Jesus' work in my life.
Yeah.
But our company, it's based in the DC area. We work with all kinds of clients, almost every category you could think of, ranging from, you know, Fortune 100, you know, global corporations that you definitely are dealing with every day, down to really innovative and cool startups that are just transforming the world in amazing ways.
Yeah.
Just fun, But also, we built a ministry practice that we're working with, I don't know, a couple dozen ministries right now, seven of the top 25 Christian ministries in the world. And we work with two church planting networks. So we have a little bit of insight into what you guys are dealing with on a daily basis. And then additionally, we end up dealing with a ton of churches as well, large and small, usually large, and usually in crisis. So it's kind of a steady drumbeat for us.
Right. So you mentioned crisis. Without a doubt, the church is facing all kinds of crises right now, but credibility crisis is top among them, it feels like. It's more and more difficult to talk to people about the work of the church with any credibility, because there's sort of an assumption, it feels like, that the church doesn't have any credibility because of some of the things that have happened. So as pastors of new small churches, the folks that are mainly listening to this podcast, we can't exactly change the societal view of the church at large, but that doesn't mean that we can't enhance the reputation of our local churches. So I wonder, you know, when you think about the work that Pinkston does and what you've been involved in, how do you think a church best does that?
Yeah, it's a great question. And honestly, my encouragement to probably any pastor, but especially a pastor of a startup, if you will, is that they not take on that burden. Mm-hmm. And that they not think of the culture's view of the church or even their community at large, just view of the church as their responsibility or their mission. So often we see a church or a pastor focus on their profile in the community, probably for good reasons often, but it almost takes away from the focus on discipling their flock and just loving and serving their neighbors, bringing the gospel to the folks that they're connecting with through that work. I just don't think local church should be trying to change the view of the church at large. It's not the mission. And I look at the lessons from places like Mars Hill, and so many others, where there's just a focus on the external audience and the church's brand, which I bristle at putting those words together.
Right.
But even more so, the pastor's brand, which really, really sends me over the edge.
Right.
My experience is that churches that are focused and intentional about being the church don't find themselves in a crisis nearly as often as churches that are aiming to be something bigger than they probably should.
Wow. That's a great point. It seems like in the moment we're living in, there's a minefield that's causing pastors to have fear and freeze in place rather than move forward in bold faith to reshape their communities. What are some steps that you think young churches can take to mitigate risk and that might embolden them to press forward in ministry without having fear?
It's a good question. I got a couple of thoughts here. I mean, the first one is going to be super obvious, but I feel like I have to start with it anyway, because it's the most important thing. God is sovereign. He loves us. He loves his church. He has a perfect plan here for you, your family, your ministry, and your church. And sometimes his plan, as we all know, involves pain and hardship. And as we walk that out in faithfulness, he ends up being glorified and we end up being sanctified individually and corporately. And so I mean, my first point is we cannot walk in fear or serve our church in fear. And I would also say, and I know this to be true, the vast majority of issues or crises that a pastor, particularly of a plant, but I would say almost any pastor, most of the issues they're going to face are going to be limited in visibility to the congregation. Mm-hmm. It is, you hear about them all the time, But thinking about the number of churches that exist across the country, the number of times that this actually extends beyond the walls of the church is pretty rare. And so I think over-focusing on it can be almost counterproductive.
Yeah.
But sometimes crises do go beyond either the walls of the church, and the prospect is terrifying. I find in our work that those issues kind of fall into two categories. One of them is that we live in a culture that is increasingly uncomfortable, or in many cases, even hostile to biblical truth. Mm-hmm. And a pastor that's going to teach or preach all the truths that the word contains is going to tread into some issues that won't be understood or accepted by a mainstream audience. Mm. And that just seems to be increasing. This risk is essentially unavoidable, but there are, I think, some ways to communicate truth without compromise in a winsome, gracious, loving way. That's about the best we can do here. It's rare, though, that these become a crisis unless a pastor or a church are overtly trying to communicate them externally to move people's positions and perceptions outside of the church. Mm. That's when I think these things tend to spin up. The second category should be way more preventable than the first, except for the fact that the church and the church leadership happen to be composed of human beings who tend to sin. Mm-hmm. And so these situations are usually related to some relational fracture or failure in the church, often involving the leadership on some level. These are the ones that we get called about. Mm-hmm. They're the ones that most likely end up in the media, mainstream, local, sometimes national, and very oftentimes even in Christian media. Mm-hmm. And you know, and I know that we're sadly seeing them all the time. And it seems like with increasing frequency.
Yeah, it does seem like the frequency is increasing. As somebody who like does this work day to day, it's almost feels overwhelming, like the amount of negative pressure that's coming. Yeah, it's coming to churches and pastors. Unprecedented numbers of churches crumbling in crisis, just like we've mentioned. Some of those churches, large churches. How important is communication, or a communication strategy that's maybe built before a crisis happens or in the midst of crisis? How important is a communication strategy when a crisis happens?
Yeah, I mean, it's very important. I mean, good communication is critical to a church on every level. It's largely what the church is doing. Yeah. But when you're dealing with something that has a potential to end up on the figurative front page of the newspaper, it's even more critical. It's a pretty rare situation, but when it happens, it can be obviously pretty devastating, locally and really kind of almost globally. Mm-hmm. From a media or external communications perspective, the best steps I think that a young church or any church can take to mitigate those risks are to plan ahead and to build some trust in advance. I'll tell you a little bit about what I mean. Planning ahead, I think a leadership team of a church must take time to sit down and just examine the kind of risk that they might face and what they can do operationally to mitigate them before they get into a difficult situation. Most of these things are tied to sex, money, or power. And honestly, the calls that we get, the crises that we engage in are almost always sex.
Right.
In one area or another, it's pretty overwhelming. Mm-hmm. You need to know in advance who from your leadership needs to be involved in a response. You need to factor in what you owe your sending or sponsoring church and understanding how that process should work in advance, so you're not figuring it out on the fly or making mistakes. You want to know, what is my process when an issue comes to my attention. Often the reflex is to hide things rather than deal with them in a more proactive way. And honestly, this often comes from the right heart. It's the heart that's protective of the flock. I want to protect them at all costs. But in hiding something or trying to stave it off rather than dealing with it, can actually do way more harm to the body than to actually just kind of rip the Band-Aid off.
Yeah.
One thing that I recommend that a pastor do, or any leader in a church, is to be a consumer of other church crises. Mm. I know that sounds kind of weird and terrible, but you should be examining yourself constantly and humbly. As you see these stories kind of cross the wire, you should be asking yourself, could that happen here?
Wow.
Could some form of that happen here? I mean, rather than a almost arrogant, better than you attitude, it should be a humble attitude of, oh my goodness, we are a sin away from that. Mm-hmm. And it's an opportunity to understand the Lord's kindness towards you, and to understand the fragility and humanity that makes up church leadership. Asking yourself, as you see another crisis unfold, could that be said of us?
Yeah.
Are we making the same mistakes here? And then, I mean, almost using those as teaching moments, man, what do we have in place to keep us from that? I just think it's so, so healthy, and it really does. It does work.
Yeah.
And as part of that, I mean, one of the most important points that I think that I'll make is not to view this as a communications issue. This is, before anything, well, it's a spiritual issue, but it's an operational issue before anything else. Like, you can't out communicate a set of bad policies. It's just, there's not enough PR experts to get you out of a bind when you haven't done the things that are kind of best practices in a church setting to prevent and mitigate risk and disaster wherever you can. You know, what is the process when an allegation is brought to you of some kind of a abuse?
Yeah.
What are the things that you could have done to have prevented that? I mean, just take yourself to the worst case scenario. If this happens, what could we have done, and where have we failed to put processes and safeguards in place that protect, protect the body, and honestly protect, protect our witness or our standing.
Yeah.
And then you worry about the communication out of that. One that we've dealt with repeatedly, and I'm thinking of one in particular, but I obviously won't give any identifying information, but it's not unusual, sadly, for there to be an abuse allegation coming out of like the children's ministry. Mm-hmm. Somebody with oftentimes legitimate access to kids is accused of doing something, unspeakable. And so it happens a lot. And so you've got to assume you're at risk if you have kids in your church. Mm-hmm. And so think about, again, like the worst case scenario. Walk through, assume this is going to happen, and walk through what it's going to look like. And then ask yourself the questions about what you could have, should have done. What were the screening policies in place? If something goes wrong, you're going to be asked that question.
Yeah.
And you
yeah.
better be buttoned up today on how you're screening people that have access to children. What were your prevention policies about protecting kids? You know, policies like not having an adult and a kid together alone in any circumstance. And how is that policy enforced? That's where the failure comes. Knowing best practices and implementing them in advance at your church is, I mean, it's table stakes. You have to do that. Mm-hmm. And then you keep going. You keep going down that worst case scenario. An allegation is made. What is the first thing that you did? What did you do immediately? Yeah. Did you immediately pick up the phone and call the police and file a report? Was that the first thing you did? Because if it's not, if you had conversations and you had some meetings and you you delayed that by a day, a week, mm-hmm. an hour, what risk have you put other kids in that time frame? Who were you trying to protect by avoiding doing the thing that is absolutely necessary to do? So, oh my goodness. So if this comes up, here's what we're going to do immediately. Here's the first thing we're going to do, the second, the third. What kind of investigation would you implement? And have you figured out what that would look like? And what external resources would you use to make sure that it was a investigation that was credible internally and externally? Did you notify potential victims? Oh, people don't want to do that because it's so awful and so alarming, mm-hmm. and they delay it. Maybe this will turn out to be not true. Mm-hmm. And then they find themselves in a much, much worse position with parents whose kids were at risk and the parents were in the dark when all of this was going on. And then this can just kind of go on and on and on asking these questions, but doing it in advance is way preferable than doing it in the heat of the moment. That's where mistakes are made. And there's a ton of, I mean, there's a variety of categories of crises that a church could face. And I mean, there's no way you can plan for every one of them, but there's categories that you and I already know, and you should have thought through and discussed with your leadership team, you know, where are we at risk? What can we do to mitigate risk? And if something bad happens, how are we going to handle it? Wow. It's not a comfortable conversation, but really one that must be had.
Yeah. Sometimes crises happen all of a sudden, but a lot of times, you know, there's something that's not quite right that, you know, in time becomes a full blown crisis.
Oh yeah.
What are some of the indicators that a situation could escalate and get to, you know, because I think what happens a lot is we tend to say this isn't that big a deal, it'll blow over, and then it becomes a bigger deal.
Yeah, I mean, handling a crisis when it is small and avoiding the temptation to sort of protect the congregation from a difficult situation by sweeping it under the rug or dealing with it behind closed doors can be problematic. Now, I'm not for a moment suggesting that everything that comes across your desk should be shared with the congregation.
All right.
I'm not saying that. There's such a thing as oversharing. But I am saying examining every kind of risk factor or everything that you're encountering that's a potential crisis as a way to engage with the right audience in a way that's ultimately going to glorify the Lord. These things are, I mean, I hate to say this, but it's true. I mean, these things are appointments by the Lord in his sovereignty as opportunities for you to glorify him and an opportunity for you to walk out faithfulness in front of your, you know, in front of your flock and your congregation and to do it without fear.
Yeah.
And so I think people tend to just ignore things, man, view it as an opportunity instead of a landmine.
We hear so many train wreck stories. Is there anything that comes to mind that could be an encouragement to us of a church that was proactive about this, handled a situation really well, maybe again, not specifically identifying it, but is there anything you could tell us about a church that did this okay to give us some hope?
Yeah. I mean, I think the most hopeful thing I can tell you is that the vast majority of issues that happen in a church you have never heard of. Mm-hmm. I mean, the vast majority of these things, particularly when they're handled well and genuinely and with some transparency, you'll never hear of them. I mean, This is just kind of the human story.
Yeah.
I know there's this sense, and you and I both said it, that these things are happening everywhere and they're happening frequently. And you know, we'd like to see a lot less of it, but in the whole scheme of ministry, it's pretty rare that a crisis escalates to the degree that you fear it will.
Yeah.
We've worked with a lot of churches that have dealt with issues of, oh man, all kinds of things. I mean, every disaster you could imagine, up to and including death, at an event or whatever, all kinds of sexual issues, all kinds of management issues, financial issues, you name it. And even of the ones that come to us, I would say you haven't heard of most of them. Mm-hmm. When a church communicates well and they're humble and there's a sense of transparency and authenticity, things tend to go, I mean, they're not painless, they're painful, but the Lord redeems those things. And the ones that we see ending up, you know, on the national news or even the local news tend to be the churches that don't want to do what is necessary in the moment. In fact, that's the main reason that we would tell a church no that approached us. This literally just happened a couple of weeks ago. A church approached us with a abuse situation, and it was a pastor that was alleged to have done the abuse. And as I was asking questions and kind of unfolding the situation, it came to light that they were aware of allegations prior to the one in question. And the process had been, it had been lacking, to say the least. And I said, you know, in order for you to deal with this situation effectively, and it's not going to be painless, here are the five things you need to do. And many of them involved basically taking responsibility.
Yeah.
And being open and transparent. And they were unwilling to do that.
Yeah.
And so we said, you know, we can't work with you. That's where these things, hiding, denying, that's where these things escalate into major stories most of the time. And it's avoidable.
Stepping out of the crisis lane for just a second to think about proactive communications. Churches, especially new churches, are invisible in their communities largely. How can a church, a small church planning pastor, work to introduce this congregation to the community through public relations? Because we don't really know anything about public relations. You know, we just put up signs and hope for the best, you know? So talk to us about how a pastor would engage with the public.
Yeah, I would say two things. The first thing is not really an answer to your question, but it's tangential, so I'm going to say it anyway. Okay. One of the things that I would encourage a pastor or a church leadership team to do is to communicate well internally first.
Okay.
And so if you create a culture of transparency and kind of humble openness, not to a reckless degree, to a reasonable degree, you start building trust with your congregation and you let them in a little bit. Again, not in a reckless way, in a thoughtful and healthy way. You let them in to some of the difficulty. It builds a culture of trust. And when something really bad does happen, having established that trust internally will take you a long way.
Yeah.
And when a church has a culture, and many do, a culture of being a lockbox and secretive, then when something goes wrong, everyone jumps to the worst possible conclusion. And so that's one thing that you can do from a communication standpoint that's proactive, even in the good times, especially in the good times. Go ahead and create that culture so people understand who you are and they trust you. They trust what you say. When you say something is so, they're going to believe you because they've seen it. They've seen it played out, even in some tough situations in the past. And then when you go external, we tell clients, ministries and corporations, the best crisis communication strategy is to be proactively communicating and building a reputation before there is a crisis. If the first thing someone hears about you is negative, it is really, really hard to transform that narrative. And again, you've got no equity, if you will, in the community. And so I think it's really important for a church, especially a church plant, to have visibility in the community. Mm-hmm. That being said, I think it has to be the right kind of visibility. Mm-hmm. If a church is trying to elevate its profile for the wrong reason, it's just so obvious and off-putting, especially to non-believers, I think.
Yeah.
It just almost plays into this, you know, characterization that they might have about people of faith, and particularly when it's involving a person or a leader. It's just people bristle. That and it's counterproductive. But when your church can be known for loving and serving their community, when your church is taking church outside the four walls, we're sacrificially serving and loving our community, in addition to the discipling that we're doing within our flock,
right?
That resonates. It's so unusual. Loving people with radical grace is so countercultural that people can't help but be attracted to it and be intrigued by it. And so thinking of not in a manipulative way at all. That's not what I mean. And this has to come out of deep, deep love for Jesus, out of his deep, deep love for you. But if this is done with integrity, man, it's way better than any PR campaign that a firm like mine could ever develop for your church.
Wow.
It's just got to come out of that. And that, man, that's what the church is all about.
Yeah, that's really good to hear, because as a church planter myself and working with church planters, there's a lot of stuff we do on the outreach, in the outreach category, that we really like those one-to-one connections. Like we do something and then people show up on Sunday as a result. But there's a lot of things that we do that just simply build the reputation of our church and our community and don't necessarily reflect in the offering plate or the attendance. And sometimes those things feel wasteful, but what I hear you saying is they're really not. Building the rapport in your community is a marathon.
They're not. There's no waste there, because I mean, at the end of the day, again, I'll say the Lord is glorified. The results aren't up to us. Mm-hmm. We're not called to the results. We're called to loving the Lord with all our heart, mind, soul, strength, and loving those neighbors like we love ourselves, and letting the Lord do with that what he will. Mm-hmm. And I mean, you know, he generally tends to do some really cool things out of that.
Yeah. So let me ask you one more question before we wrap up today. So there's some topics that are kind of radioactive, COVID mandates, politics, sexuality, you know, and there's churches fall in different categories on this about how they address these things, but that sometimes they avoid the topics altogether. to avoid scrutiny or criticism. Is that the right approach?
No, I don't think so. This is so, so tricky. It's probably the hardest question you've asked. And we think about this a lot. I mean, at the end of the day, as a pastor, you have to do what's right for your congregation. You have to meet spiritual needs that are present, and it differs congregation by congregation. The makeup and almost like the personality of every conversation, the congregation is so different. And so you're taking that into account as you're communicating in the words that you're using. Also always knowing that the words you're using are also probably going to be potentially consumed by an external audience. And so my advice, I guess, is not to avoid controversial issues, but think about how you engage on those topics. And if that's the, if those are the topics that your flock is engaging in the workplace or in their neighborhood, just because that's what's happening, you know, people are talking about vaccines or whatever. I think modeling that for them, talking through it in a winsome, gracious, but biblically sound way is helpful to the congregation. I think a pastor can serve his congregation well by doing that. Yeah. But I would just emphasize that humility goes a long way here. Yeah. Tone can make all of the difference. And my advice is that when you're speaking on what you know to be a controversial issue, don't wing it.
Yeah.
Don't assume you're a good enough communicator. You're just going to, the words are going to come to you in the moment. Yeah. That is risky. Wow. I mean, you owe it to your congregation, to the people that you're serving, to prepare and to practice and to vet your language and your approach with trusted advisors who will knock the edges off. Don't be flippant about issues that you know are going to hit people in the heart in all kinds of different ways.
Wow. That's really good advice, because pastors tend to overestimate their communication aptitude.
That is so true. We all do, right?
Christian, it is super rare for church planners to get access to this kind of expertise. So thank you so much for taking time to talk with these guys about this. I appreciate you.
I am super humbled to be able to try to help out a little bit. And I'm just a passionate cheerleader for the men and women that are doing this really, really hard work in some really hard contexts. So, man, anything I can do to be an encouragement, I will jump at the chance to do.
Thank you, man.
You've been listening to the New Churches Podcast, brought to you by the Send Network. If you like what you heard, take a few minutes to rate and review us or share this episode with a friend. It's the best way to show your support. To find more reliable resources to start your new church well, visit newchurches.com.